Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play. Welcome to the Fallout Lorecast, the podcast that explores the boundaries of our knowledge about the world of Fallout. So by now, you've probably seen the Burning Springs announcement for Fallout 76. We're going to Ohio for the first time. We've never been to Ohio before in a Fallout game. And the ghoul from the TV show is showing up in Ohio. Now, there's a bunch of information about this. And to kick this off, I'm going to read through just some of the details that have been revealed so far. And thank you to Bethesda for allowing me to be part of the content creators who got a preview at this. I was hinting that this was coming over the last few weeks. But this is not a sponsored episode. This is just me being excited about what's coming, but also I have questions. How is Ohio in the state that it's in? It appears more like a desert, or at least parts of it do. So I'm going to take a look at maybe some of the things that could have influenced that to happen, because it obviously isn't a desert today, as far as I know. And also, the ghoul is a part of this, which means he must have had a reason or ended up here somehow. Why would he have come out all the way to Ohio from California? And this must have happened sometime in the 28, 29-ish years. You have to remember that Fallout 76 was released, and I believe the date was 25 years after the bombs dropped, but with new expansions, the timeline has been continuing on. So this might be 29 years, according to the lore, something like that. I don't know for sure yet, but let's go with 29 years. And in that time, how long did it take him to make the trip? When did he make the trip? How long would it take somebody to make that journey? He probably didn't have a car or a vertibird, so did he hoof it on foot? Was he on a horse? How long would that take? And how would he travel? What direction would he even go in order to make his way across a wasteland version of the U.S. right after the bombs dropped, or at least within the first 2 to 3 decades after the bombs dropped? So we're going to take a look at all of this. And you're going to get my take on everything before we actually get more details from being able to play the game. And maybe some of this stuff will be revealed. I don't know yet. I genuinely don't know. So, well, this will be fun. We'll see if any of this is accurate or matches the way the things work out. So here we go. So there is actually a lot of minutia in the details of the things that are coming to this expansion beyond just the location and the character. So I wanted to go over that stuff first, and then we'll get into answering some of these questions as the episode continues. So first of all, I found this article, nukenites.com. This website's great. Lots of cool Fallout stuff. Go check it out. They talk about the expansion to Ohio. They say atmospheric improvements include dynamic weather effects such as sandstorms in Ohio that can alter visibility and influence ongoing events. These are complemented by a new musical score created specifically for the region. So this feels like a major expansion already. Nuclear strikes also play a role. While Highway Town cannot be targeted, that's one of the main city town kind of locations in this region of the map. Detonating a nuke elsewhere in Ohio produces unique results, with new flora, irradiated variants appearing in enemies like radhogs reacting in distinctive ways. And we're going to get a variety of different new creatures and animals, too. Also, 20 new locations. So there's Highway Town. This is like the social hub. And inside here is a place called The Last Resort, where you can get bounty missions. You can form teams. You can organize hunts together. These are new mechanics that you can do in the game. The bounty missions are probably connected to the ghoul. The hub has been compared to Fallout 4's Diamond City, though this time in a multiplayer context. However, Highway Town is not entirely safe, as hostile characters still roam the area, preserving the wasteland's dangerous tone. Now, you can see from the screenshots and some of the things that have been revealed that this is a very deserty looking map. This looks more like New Vegas than it does Appalachia or, I don't know, the Commonwealth, any of those locations, which is weird, right? Because Ohio doesn't normally look like that. There are a few other places that have been mentioned. I'm sure this isn't a definitive list, but places like Jackson Junkyard, Athens, the city of Athens, which has a sign that says "Turn back or die," with the I guess the old university building there. Rust Kingdom looks like something with a bunch of raiders who like to pretend they're Mad Max. The Last Resort I mentioned, and then Dino Peaks Mini Golf exists on the map as well, which is always fun to have those kinds of locations. So let's talk about some of the creatures. Among them are, and this is according to the same article, radhogs, which display a notable reaction when exposed to nuclear strikes, adding unpredictability to the wasteland. The radhogs can even be tamed as pets for your camp if you dare. These guys look crazy. I mean, they look like these really, really muscular, angry boars with big old teeth and funny hair, and they're pretty cool looking. In addition, the hostile Rust faction led by the Rust King emerges as a new threat in Ohio. Players will also encounter armored Deathclaws as part of this faction, reinforcing the dangers that define the expansion's new region. Fun stuff. Armored Deathclaws? Can you imagine taming a Deathclaw and getting it to stand still long enough to be able to put armor on it? I'm curious about how this works and what's actually going on here. So the article also talks about Walton Goggins reprising his character for the game, and there is some footage of him behind the scenes doing his voice readings and all of that stuff. Very excited about this. I'm you guys know about those details. He basically plays the ghoul, but now the ghoul is in Ohio for some reason and has something to do with giving you bounties and all of that. And that's one of the big systems that's coming. There are grunt hunts, which are these smaller events that you can tackle solo, and then there are head hunts, which are these big public events, much like other public events, but you basically take one of these bounties and then other people, I guess, are notified, and then everybody can come together and try to achieve the head hunt together. So that seems like a lot of fun as well. Now, this should connect to, at least I'm assuming, why the ghoul is here. Maybe he was following bounties and it led him across the country, but we'll get more into that in a little bit. Also, of course, there's more quest lines and stories and characters, and some of them seem really interesting and super weird. The Rust King is a super mutant, super weird looking stuff. Then there are two new public events, one called Sinkhole Solutions, which takes place near Highway Town, and a bunch of insects are invading this location. And you have to take them all out. Rad scorpions. This section of the map looks very orangey, yellow, tan colored, deserty, very New Vegas like. Then there's another one called Gearing Up, and this takes place at Jackson's Junkyard, and you'll meet somebody called the Beastmaster. Again, feeling kind of that, Mad Maxy kind of vibes here. She'll tell you that the Rust King's Deathclaws come from this place, and they're raised and trained for combat in the wasteland or in the arena. Your task is to equip a Deathclaw with armor and prepare it for a fight while being attacked by raiders. This seems insane and goes back to that idea of like getting the Deathclaw to stay in one place long enough to put a bunch of armor on him and him not take your head off. I have a hard enough time with my 12-pound dog getting him to take medicine without biting my fingers, let alone a Deathclaw and putting armor on him. So there's that. There's a bunch of new weapons and armors and outfits and mods. There's new fishing locations. The fishing stuff is expanded on. There's a bunch of other minor updates and those kinds of things. So the point of this episode isn't to go into all of those details. It's to kind of give you an overview of the stuff that's coming because it sounds super cool. But it plays into my questions. First of all, Ohio is a desert? Ohio isn't a desert in our own world. Now, I don't live in Ohio, but I have traveled a bit, and I've been to, I don't know if I've actually been in Ohio or just in the states next to Ohio. Anyway, I've been close to Ohio, but I thought I'd do some research and figure out, okay, what is Ohio like now? What can we assume it would have been like before the bombs dropped, most likely? And then how do you get from that to a desert? What could have happened? In fact, something must have happened because this isn't a desert. So let's get into some of the detail. What is Ohio now? Well, according to my research, Ohio experiences a humid continental climate marked by warm, moist summers, wonderful word, and cool to cold winters. The state receives moderate and consistent precipitation throughout the year, supporting a diverse ecosystem. So lots of precipitation. That's the opposite of a desert. Geographically, Ohio is predominantly composed of plains and rolling hills, with the rugged Appalachian Plateau in the east. A significant portion of the state is dedicated to agriculture, a testament to its fertile soil, and it boasts extensive hardwood forests. Major waterways like the Ohio River and Lake Erie further contribute to its water-rich environment. Okay, so recapping, lots of moisture, water, a river, a big lake. Lake Erie's one of the Great Lakes. It's pretty massive. Lots of soil that grows things, lots of trees, rolling hills, and plains. This does not feel like a desert at all. Now, it is a desert in the game, which means in the 29 years that we go from 2077 to the timeline of Fallout 76, something must have happened. But what? Well, we know for sure some things. We know that bombs dropped everywhere. Nuclear Armageddon happened. Massive amounts of smaller sized nukes dotted the US, and not at random, at specific targets like major cities, but also not just major cities, places where there are military bases or, and I don't know how confirmed this is in the lore, but it would have been smart if you have that many nukes to also target places of major natural resources or locations that would hinder the ability of Americans to actually have the food that they need or the natural resources they needed in order to try to build back, to really, really hobble places. It's one thing to destroy a major city. It's another to create a problem that destroys your farmland so that even those people who survive don't have enough to eat. Now, this is a secondary thing, again, not 100% confirmed in the lore, but I don't know if you've got that many nukes and you're somebody who's being very, very intentional about doing the most destruction to a group of people as possible, then natural resources might be something that you target. This is going somewhere, so go with me on this. Now, something must have happened to transform it into a desert. What can transform something into a desert? Well, traditionally, natural deserts occur due to the changes and the limitations of moisture. Now, how does moisture work? Well, if we all go back to fifth grade, I don't know, climate science or whatever, when you have a landmass near a body of water, whether that's a big lake or it's the ocean or whatever, then the sun shines down on the water heats up, it evaporates into the air, it accumulates in clouds, the clouds then get pushed over the land by some wind source of some sort. As it goes over the land, not only does the temperature change, but also the closer you get to higher land, like hills and mountains, the water gets kind of consolidated as the air pressure increases and it pushes the water up, which then causes water droplets to form and they fall to the ground as rain. That's generally how that works, right? So this creates two things. First of all, the side of a mountain or the side of a continent or just the land near the water tends to be more moist. It gets more rainfall. It's better for growing things. You end up with lots of trees and lots of plants and that kind of stuff. But the other side of the mountain doesn't. Most deserts are at least on some side bordered by some sort of physical structure that causes all of the water to get squeezed out of the air before the winds continue over the side of a mountain or a hill or just a longer part of the continent. So in the case of Ohio, how does this work? Well, you have two different sources. You have air that comes up from the south, from the Gulf of Mexico, and yes, I'm still calling it the Gulf of Mexico, and then you also have water that comes off of the Great Lakes, like Lake Erie, and it depends on the time of year and the way the winds are blowing and all of that, but each of those contribute to the water in this area. What you don't seem to have is water that comes from the Atlantic and tries to make its way over the mountains, because if that were the case, then Ohio could be a desert because the Appalachian Mountains might squeeze out all the moisture. Now that does happen sometimes, but because you have all of this other source of water with a jet stream moving from the west to the east, then the water that the wet air that comes up from the Gulf or down from the north still keeps places like Ohio reasonably wet. That's why this side of the continent is so much more green than the western side of the continent where the big mountains are. So that was all very, very condensed. And I'm sure there's a lot more detail to this. And I'm also not a climatologist or a weather guy. But from my research, those are the rough strokes, right? And so that's why Ohio isn't a desert today. So in order for Ohio to become a desert, that means something must have changed the way that those weather patterns work. What could have possibly changed the weather patterns? Well, we know that all these bombs went off. What happens when a bunch of nukes go off, especially in large volumes and in large numbers, the way that they would have during the Great War? Well, you end up with a bunch of stuff getting kicked up into the air. All sorts of things, ash from burning things, but just soil and sand and just all sorts of stuff. What this does is it creates a nuclear winter, which we've talked about before.
Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states, thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab-tested, real results. Go to Mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's Mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
What's a nuclear winter? Well, it's when there's enough soot and crap in the air that it blocks out the sun substantially so that not only do the temperatures reduce, but things don't grow because they don't get enough sunlight. Now, a nuclear winter after a catastrophe like this could last a significant period of time. It could be a year or two before that subsides. So if we're looking at the time frame from 2077 up to 29 years later, then nuclear winter wouldn't generally still be around. That's a little bit longer than you would expect for the ash to kind of settle and cycle out of the atmosphere. On the short end of this time frame, you're looking a few years. On the long end of the time frame, we're looking at maybe a decade, a little bit more than a decade. At least those are based on scientific estimations. So 29 years later means that that nuclear winter would have subsided and had been subsided for almost 20 years at this point. So what does this mean for a desert environment being in Ohio? Well, if it actually did affect the plant growth and the temperatures of that area, then we would see an Ohio that was much colder with a lot less vegetation growing. Many of the species of trees and bushes and grasses and things like that could have died off in that time period. But that doesn't solve the problem of why is it a desert? It would be one thing to say that this is more of a barren, a series of plains where the remnants of trees kind of dot the horizon and that kind of thing. But it is seriously dry. You look at the screenshots and the ground is cracked. This place does not have moisture. So something else must have happened. What else could cause a lack of moisture to that level? Well, something else could have happened when the bombs dropped and nuclear winter set in, because when you have something massive like that happen and affect things on a global scale, weather patterns across the globe can change. So did the prevailing winds that run west to east across the United States change directions? Did they shift more north or more south? Maybe temperature changes could potentially cause that to happen. The air being filled with soot and other things could mean that you have less room or less heating to cause moisture to kick up into the atmosphere, which could then change the patterns. But like I said before, if everything kind of goes back to the way it was before, because nuclear winter settles and then plants and things get more moisture again, maybe the world goes back to a weather environment that's more similar to the way it is now, or maybe not. So there is some speculation there. But I have another idea. I've got another theory for why this might change. If the water sources that provide moisture to Ohio include the Great Lakes, and a significant portion of that comes from the Great Lakes, then what if something happened to the Great Lakes? Now, you might still get moisture up from the south, from the Gulf, but again, what if the prevailing winds have shifted? What if things are not moving the way that they would? What if the prevailing winds are taking the moisture from the south and heading it more to the west? Who knows? So if that were to go away, and also something were to devastate the Great Lakes, like a bunch of nukes going off around major cities that dot the edges of the Great Lakes, which there are plenty of, then what would happen to the water in the lakes? Well, a few things could happen. First of all, the initial impact of those bombs on the waterside places and even some stray nukes into the actual lakes themselves could vaporize massive amounts of water. Now, the lakes are very deep. There's a ton of water in those lakes. So it wouldn't completely dry out the lakes as far as I can tell from my research. But that doesn't mean that you wouldn't also have other catastrophic things happening to the landscape that might affect the lakes in other ways. The lakes are connected by very, very small connection points at different locations. What if Lake Erie, one of the smaller lakes, was cut off from the rest of the connective areas to the rest of the lakes, and large amounts of that water were destroyed, were evaporated, were vaporized into the atmosphere? Well, then you would have a situation where Ohio would have way less water on that side of the state. So if those two things happened, it very well could change this to a more desert environment, and that could progress over 29 years. So it seems plausible. Now, is this definitive? Well, we're going to have to wait and see if this is even discussed or revealed in the update. Now, let's talk about the ghoul. What is the ghoul doing in Ohio? Well, it seems that he's tied to the bounty missions. So it's reasonable to think that he's making money and a name for himself through being a bounty hunter. And that can take you different places. Think about it like this. If you were an Uber driver and you started in one city and you got, I don't know, paid enough to drive far enough into another city, maybe even half a day's drive, are you going to drive all the way back to your home after that? Or are you going to pick up more clients where you are and continue driving to wherever they need to take you? Now, in our world today, yes, you would drive home, right? Like, you want to go home and sleep in your bed. But in an environment like the wasteland, especially if you don't really have a home, then you might just travel from one place to the next, going where those bounties take you, and eventually make your way across the country from California to Ohio. But how long would that take? Is that even possible? Well, in 29 years, that is 100% possible. In fact, you could make that trip 29 times. I've done the research. This is 2,400 miles. A healthy individual, or somebody who's ghoulified and still has the means to walk like a regular person, could travel 10 miles per day. That is possible. You could acclimate to that, assuming that you've got good shoes and you have food and whatever. 8 to 10 miles a day is realistic. And this is even assuming for needing time to rest, time to resupply, time to sleep, all of those things. In fact, somebody who really, really wanted to get somewhere could go about 20 miles a day on good terrain. Now, the terrain between California and Ohio is through the mountains, and there's lots of rough terrain. So even if you were to cut this in half and say 5 miles a day, that goes from an 8-month journey to a 16-month journey, which is a year, not even a year and a half. So within a year and a half, you could make the trip from California to Ohio at a fairly leisurely pace. Now, let's say you went everywhere along the way that your bounties took you in every which direction and eventually ended up in Ohio. Could you do that 16-month journey in 29 years? Absolutely. You absolutely could. Which leads me to question other things about the lore, about, I don't know, other people traveling across the country from one place to another. It seems completely possible that over 200 and something years, that many people would have traveled from one place to another place, assuming that they had the supplies, they traveled safely, all of that. Now, if you were on horse, you could do this in double the time, assuming, I guess, that you can feed the horse and take care of it and nobody kills your horse or anything like that. In fact, during the time of the Oregon Trail, pioneers traveling the Oregon Trail across the country, 2,170 miles by wagon train, were able to make the journey in 4 to 6 months. Now, that seems like a long period of time, but compared to 29 years, not so much. So this is fun. I put together a route that you could potentially take if you wanted to make this journey as efficiently as possible by foot. And It takes you by some interesting places. First, of course, you'd start in Los Angeles. Then you would go northeast up Interstate 15, old Interstate 15, or the historic Route 66, up into the Mojave Desert. You would end up south of Las Vegas between there and like Laughlin. Then you'd continue going east, traveling south of the Grand Canyon across the Navajo Nation and Hopi Reserves, and then through the mountains, through the Rio Grande National Forest. I'm sure the views here would be amazing. All the way through Colorado, south of Colorado Springs, into Kansas, just south of Kansas City. And again, this is making sure that you're following any of the remaining roads that might be around, or even following rivers at times. You'd make your way through St. Louis, and assuming that these are locations that are safe to travel through, up to Indianapolis, and then over into Ohio from there. It is 100% possible to walk this, assuming that you had the means, the ability, food, safety. And for a guy like the Ghoul, seems totally possible. So there you go. There's my take on why Ohio could possibly be a desert and how the Ghoul would get from one place to another. But I could be wrong. We might get totally different explanations for this when we finally get to the update. So it'll be interesting to see. If you have any other thoughts about this, please comment, join our Discord, let us know, comment on the episode. Maybe there's some things I missed and some things that are just glaringly obvious, but this is my take on it, and I thought that would be a lot of fun. All right, we've got two new reviews to talk about, but also thank you everybody for your support on Patreon, patreon.com/falloutlorecast. Thank you to our Sentry Bots Germinator and Dusty Ray for continuing your support and getting shout outs every week at that tier. Plus you can get ad free episodes, you can join us on our Patreon chats, you can get t-shirts and stickers, all sorts of fun stuff. So go check it out. And no new ones this week, but if you do sign up, I'll shout you out as well. Also, these are the new reviews that came in. This one from The Ashy One. Excellent show. Started recently, working my way backwards through the podcast, and I'm loving it. The host is great, and the deep dives to the corners of the Fallout universe are so fascinating. I can't recommend it enough. Thanks so much, Ashy. And then this one from KiwiBird111, who says, the best Fallout podcast ever. You can really tell this guy puts a lot of time and effort into researching all these facts. Keep up the good work. Well, thanks so much, KiwiBird. I'm glad you appreciate that. All right, everybody. Thanks for being here. I'm excited about this new update. I'm considering rebuilding my character again for some other sort of spec. I've been using the auto axe, and I don't know, I think I want to shoot things again, but then I saw one the other day for like a Deathclaw fist that does a ton of damage. I don't know. What are you going with? What builds are you doing? What are you using to hunt down these bounties and all of that? Let me know. Give me some recommendations. I know things have changed with the balance and stuff, and I'm sure they will continue when this update comes out as well. But yeah, if you've got any tips for what to build out my character as, let me know. I've got some thoughts, but all right. Have a wonderful week. Stay safe in the wasteland. And when putting armor on a Deathclaw, be careful. I hear they bite. To plug into everything else we're doing, check out robotsradio.net. Reach out to me on Twitter at robots_radio. Check out the Robots Radio Rocket Club, where you can join me and a bunch of our other creators creating your podcast, starting a new podcast, or helping your current podcast grow. There's more information about that on robotsradio.net as well. And you can always talk with us and the entire community, over 2,000 people on the Robots Radio Discord. Come join us. We'd love to chat with you. See you guys next time.